ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 5. Narada Muni cursed by Prajapati Daksha. Text 23. Please repeat. Nasham.
Nasham.
Nishamya.
Nishamya.
Putranam.
Putranam.
Naradat.
Naradat.
Shila Shalinam
Shila Shalinam
Anvatapyata
Anvatapyata
Ka
Ka
Shochan
Shochan
Su
Su
Prajastvam
Prajastvam
Shucham
Shucham
Padam
Padam.
Nasham nishamya putranam
Nasham nishamya putranam
Naradashchila shalinam
Naradashchila shalinam
Anvatapyata kashochan
Anvatapyata kashochan
Suprajastvam sucham padam
Suprajastvam sucham padam
Nasham nishamya putranam
Nasham nishamya putranam
Naradashchila shalinam
Naradashchila shalinam
Anvatapyata kashochan
Anvatapyata kashochan
Suprajastvam sucham padam
Suprajastvam sucham padam
Nasham
Nasham
The loss.
The loss.
Nishamya.
Nishamya.
Hearing of.
Hearing of.
Putranam.
Putranam.
Of his sons.
Of his sons.
Narada.
Narada.
From Narada.
From Narada.
Shila Shalinam.
Shila Shalinam.
Who are the best of well-behaved persons. Anvatapyata suffered. Ka Prajapati Daksha
Shochan
lamenting. Suprajastvam having 10,000 well-behaved sons. Shucham of lamentation. Padam
position.
Translation. The Hariyaspas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were very well-behaved, cultured sons. But unfortunately, because of the instructions of Narada Muni, they deviated from the order of their father. When Daksha heard this news, which was brought to him by Narada Muni, he began to lament. Although he was the father of such good sons, he had lost them all. Certainly, this was lamentable. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Hariyaspas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were certainly well-behaved, learned, and advanced, and in accordance with the order of their father, they went to perform austerities to beget good sons for their family. But Narada Muni took advantage of their good behavior and culture to properly direct them not to be involved with this material world, but to use their culture and knowledge to end their material affairs. The Haryashvas abided by the order of Narada Muni, but when news of this was brought to Prajapati Daksha, the Prajapati, instead of being happy with the actions of Narada Muni, was extremely sorrowful. Similarly, we are trying to bring as many young men as possible to the Krishna consciousness movement for their ultimate benefit. But the parents of the young men joining this movement, being very sorry, are lamenting and making counter-propaganda. Of course, Prajapati Daksha did not make propaganda against Narada Muni. But later, as we shall see, Daksha cursed Narada Muni for his benevolent activities. This is the way of materialistic life. They are not unhappy. This is very important. They are not unhappy when their children become spoiled, useless citizens. But they lament when they join the Krishna consciousness movement to achieve the ultimate goal of life. The animosity between parents and the Krishna consciousness movement has existed since time immemorial. Even Narada Muni was condemned, not to speak of others. Nevertheless, Narada Muni never gives up his mission to deliver as many fallen souls as possible. He continues playing his musical instrument and vibrating the transcendental sound. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada's books are extraordinary because Srila Prabhupada presents the Vedic knowledge as it is. The Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Vedas, and he presented the Bhagavad Gita as it is. And similarly, he presents all the Vedic literatures as it is, which comes to the conclusion, that one should always think of Krishna, become his devotee, offer worship to him, and bow down to him. Sarvadharman puritya mamekam saranam braja. Give up all other duties and just surrender to Krishna. And along with presenting the message as it is, Srila Prabhupada includes his own examples, or his own realizations and examples from his own experience. And one such example that he did not mention explicitly in the purport, but which he covered with the statement about the parents, they are not unhappy when their children become spoiled, useless citizens, but they lament when they join the Krishna consciousness movement to achieve the ultimate goal of life. When Srila Prabhupada came to Calcutta in 1971, the Naxalite movement was very prominent there. The Naxalites were communist youth. They're actually terrorists. Today we would call them terrorists. And they would set fire to buildings. They would kidnap rich people's sons and demand huge ransom. And they would even just shoot people dead on the street. One day the devotees and Srila Prabhupada were staying in North Calcutta. That was before we rented the place at 3 Albert Road. And they heard shots, and just two blocks away, some Naxalites had gunned down a wealthy man just to create terror and protest against capitalism. So a little while later, after we rented the premises at 3 Albert Road, a Naxalite young man joined. He was actually tall, handsome, and intelligent, and it was a big sensation that a Naxalite had joined the temple and become a devotee. And within days, his mother found out where he was, and she came to Srila Prabhupada, and she was literally weeping tears. She was literally weeping tears that her son had become a devotee of Krishna. And after she left, Srila Prabhupada was so disgusted. He said, if her son is a Naxalite, engage in all sorts of mischievous activities, that's all right. But if he becomes a Hare Krishna devotee, that's the worst thing that could happen. That's the mentality. I don't know if it's still the case, but that's the general mentality of parents, that they want their children to be materialists. They're materialists, they want their children to be materialists. And if their child becomes a spiritualist, they think it's like worse than death. Well, coming to my parents, I had anyway. There was a young lady in the neighborhood where I grew up near my parents' home, and my parents did their utmost to keep her away from me because they thought that if I got involved with her,
it would distract me from my studies. But when I became a devotee, I found this out later, when I became a devotee, they met her and asked her, you know, is there anything you can do? To get him out of that. It's like anything but Krishna. That's the general mentality of the Trailist Feet. Anything but Krishna. During the hippie movement in the 1960s, when Srila Prabhupada began to preach, they had love-ins and be-ins, you know, different types of gathering. The young people would come together and sort of voice their protest against the materialistic society. And Srila Prabhupada actually appreciated that in the hippies. He said that they know what's wrong, but unfortunately they don't know what's right. They rejected the stereotyped materialistic way of life, which was good. But unfortunately, they had no information of the beautiful life in Krishna consciousness. But then Srila Prabhupada gave them that information. And they changed. But there was some confusion, you know, are they just hippies in a different guise? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, they're not hippies, they are happies. They're becoming happy by serving Lord Krishna. So at one of these be-ins, gatherings in a park, the hippies brought a pig, and they were worshipping the pig. I mean, there's some hidden meaning or symbolism, because the police were always trying to subdue the hippies, the protesters, and the police were called pigs. But anyway, Prabhupada commented, when he heard that they were worshipping the pig, he said, they'll worship anything else besides Krishna. They'll try everything but Krishna. Krishna will be the last. So, I joined, and eventually, on Srila Prabhupada's request, came to India, and arrived in Bombay. And then after the first Bombay Pandal, Srila Prabhupada sent Tamal Krishna Goswami and me to Calcutta to organize the first Pandal there. And then after that, the first Pandal in New Delhi at the LIC grounds at Kanak Place. So while I was in Calcutta, my parents came to try to get me back. And when they entered the Calcutta temple, Srila Prabhupada was sitting in his room, darshan room. He just had one room, very simple. And he had his low cushion, as usual, his low table. And then on the other wall, in that same room, there was a bed. So when my parents came in, Srila Prabhupada spoke to them in a very intelligent way, very intelligent way. In fact, it was so subtle that unless you thought about it, you couldn't really understand how Srila Prabhupada was preaching. It sounded like he was just telling stories of his own life. So he said that in his astrological chart it was predicted that he would become the richest man in India. Now this, you know, my father, I mean, he was a very good man, but he was materialistic, as most people are. So this would have definitely caught his attention. And then Srila Prabhupada, you know, told about his successful career in the pharmaceutical industry and how eventually he had a chemist shop. In America we would say a pharmacy in Allahabad. And one of his customers was Motilal Nehru, who was the father of Jawaharlal Nehru. And he said that Motilal Nehru was a made in England man. He said if he had a medicine made in India and the exact same medicine with the label made in England, which was selling at 20 times the cost of the same medicine, Motilal Nehru would take the one that said made in England and pay 20 times the price. So again, Srila Prabhupada was in a very subtle way attacking my father's or just general Western prejudice that the West is better than India. Then he said that Motilal Nehru had a son named Jawaharlal Nehru. He had several sons, and among the sons, one was completely useless, and he was named Jawaharlal. And Srila Prabhupada said that he was such a botheration for the family that that the father, Motilal Nehru, gave him to the freedom movement. and then Prabhupada didn't have to say it, but everyone knows he became the first Prime Minister of India. So this was again in a very subtle and tactful way attacking an illusion that many people have that a big person someone that we, well, it's sort of natural, yet Acharya Shrestha says that whatever great men do, others follow, it's natural. But Prabhupada is making the point that it doesn't make sense to follow a useless person, even if he's in a big position. And Prabhupada often quoted that verse from the second canto, Savid Varaha, that people who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses glorify others who do not attend to the glories of the Lord. In other words, most of the big leaders in the world, they do not chant and hear the glories of the Lord. They have no idea who the Lord is, as a matter of fact. But they are praised by people. They're praised by people. But what is the value of that praise? It's like a big animal being praised by little animals. That's all. It has no significance. So, this is a very important point. A lot of Srila Prabhupada's preaching involved cutting people's false attachments to political leaders, to scientists, to philanthropists, because unless you give up false attachments, it's very hard to transfer your attachment to Krishna, which is the ultimate goal. So he was, you know, talking like that with my father, and my father was very fascinated, very fascinated. But he didn't forget why he came. He was a lawyer, so I mean he could appreciate a good discussion, but he didn't forget why he came. So then he was also tactful, a very intelligent person. He was also tactful. He didn't say, "I want my son back." He said, "I want to establish a trust for my son and put $1 million in it." And back then, $1 million was worth, I mean, it's still a lot, but it was worth much more than maybe, yeah, like $10 million. And he said, I want my son to come home to Chicago to sign the papers." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, you can send the papers and he will sign them." Then he said, and this also I didn't know at the time, but later when I visited my parents' home, I found that my father had a copy of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and he had underlined it and made notes. And he made special note of those portions where Srila Prabhupada said that you could practice Krishna consciousness at home. So he brought this up to my father. My father brought this up to Srila Prabhupada, our eternal father. And he said, "Well, you know, I read in your books that people can be Krishna conscious at home. So why can't Glenn just be Krishna conscious at home?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's true. But there's the question of association. One needs the association of like-minded persons to make progress on the path." So th- things were not going the way they hoped. And my mother, affectionate mother, she was very concerned about my health. And in those days, I mean, the world has changed. In those days, people had the idea, especially in American Europe, that if you don't eat meat, you won't get enough protein in your diet. People really believed that. So, yeah, my mother started to cry, and it's true, she was not a sort of sick at the time. She was very concerned. And Srila Prabhupada generally would keep a container of sweets on his table. And Prabhupada's sister, Pishima, was also in the room. So he had her put sandesh, give sandesh to my father and mother, and my sister was also there, and to try to like make her feel better. So if she ate the sandesh, she might get some spiritual inspiration. And he said that these sweets, rasgulla and sandesh, are made of cheese, and they are full of protein. Full of protein. And then he turned to me and he said, "You must eat 2 dozen rasgullas and sandesh every day." So he's trying to like alleviate their anxieties, but still they were persisting. And then Srila Prabhupada, he said, "Well, you know, if you want him to come back, you can ask him." And so, you know, they asked me, and I said, "Well, no, I want to stay with Srila Prabhupada." But then Srila Prabhupada proposed a compromise. And it was October. So he said, "Let him stay with me until April. And when I come to America in April, he can come with me." Then I said, "You know, just see how intelligent Srila Prabhupada is, that when it's pleasant in India between October and April, he's in India. But then when it gets too hot and it's pleasant in the West, then he goes to America. And then when it gets too cold in the West, he comes back to India when it's pleasant in India." And somehow by then my father was becoming influenced by Srila Prabhupada's charm and intelligence and Krishna consciousness. And he said, "Actually, he is very intelligent." And Srila Prabhupada said, sort of to deflect it, he said, "Actually, your son is intelligent because he has understood my motive." In other words, sort of joking that the reason that I understood the reason why he travels is to stay where the weather is good. But my father said, "No, actually," he said to Prabhupada, "No, actually, you are very intelligent." And Srila Prabhupada said, well, I must be intelligent, otherwise how could I attract so many intelligent young men? So it sort of ended like that. And as we were leaving the room, my father said something to me about Srila Prabhupada. And in my father's value system, these are like the highest compliments that he could pay anyone. He said, I can say two things about your master. One, he's a brilliant organizer. And two, he really knows how to deal with people. So, well, I never went back after 6 months. But as I mentioned, from Calcutta, we went to Delhi, the wonderful Pandal program at the LIC grounds. And then from Delhi, Srila Prabhupada went to Vrindavan. But I didn't go with him, because Srila Prabhupada had received an invitation to go to Madras. But he didn't want to go personally. But the invitation came from Dr. Bali, who was the husband of Vaijayanti Mala, like a Bharatanatyam dancer and film artist. So, and they were helping us in Bombay. So he wanted someone to go in his place, and I volunteered. And in Madras, I ate very well. A lot of idlis and dosa. Because our temples were really poor, I mean, in those days in ISKCON. So we were eating very, just like boiled rice, boiled dal, some vegetables, maybe dry chapatis. There was one devotee in Calcutta. He had a pretty strong body. But it's like his body was so famished, it's like so undernourished, that after the arti, when the ghee lamps had burned out, he would like squeeze, like what, just to get like a drop of ghee. Just it was really austere. But in Madras, there was no temple. We were just staying at different people's homes. And then we arranged a program for Prabhupada, and he came and he saw how I had to put on weight. He said, take a picture and send it to your mother. So he, you know, he was always mindful. You know, he was very, very compassionate, but he wasn't deviated in his mission. He wanted to spread Krishna consciousness, and he wanted young men to come forward and help him. And once he explained the same philosophy in a little different way. There were two people. This was just after we got the Juhu land finally, and Prabhupada was staying in a Chetai house of a big industrialist in Bombay, the Katows. And so I was in the room, and another devotee named Mahamsa, who also came from like a very good family. He was Parsi, actually. And they were quite a you know, respectable, well-to-do family in Bombay. And he quoted a verse from the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. guru nasasya pitaha nasasya. That no one should become a guru, no one should become a father, no one should become a mother, no one should become a husband, and no one should accept a superior position unless he or she can deliver his or her dependent from the repetition of birth and death. And then he quoted Srila Sridhar Swami's commentary on that verse. Guru, Nisasya. And he gave the example of Bali Maharaj, that it is an offense that his guru, Shukracharya, had instructed him not to surrender everything to Vishnu, not to fulfill his promise to Vishnu. But Bali Maharaj disobeyed him, but was an offense for Bali Maharaj to disobey his spiritual master? No. Because he was not a real spiritual master. Because he was not delivering his dependent from the cycle of birth and death. He wasn't instructing him properly. And then Sridhar Swami says it's the duty of the son to defend the father when the father is attacked. But when Nrisimha Bhagavan attacked Hiranyakasipu, Prahlada did not try to defend his father. But to the contrary, he offered prayers of praise to Nrisimhadeva. But was that an offense? No, because Hiranyakasipu is not a real father. And then he went through mother, it's the duty of the son to obey the mother. But when Kaikeyi ordered her son Bharat to occupy the throne, he refused to sit on the throne. But was that an offense? No, because she was not a real mother. And similarly, when the yajnik brahmanas, that this is in Vrindavan, when Krishna and Balaram sent the cowherd boys to beg from the yajnik brahmanas, and they refused, and then Krishna said, okay, you can approach their wives, and the husbands forbade their wives, but they disobeyed their husbands. They went to Krishna and Balaram and offered what they had. So was that an offense? No, because they were not real husbands. So the same principle operates here. Daksha had instructed his sons to perform austerities for the sake of creating progeny, which involves becoming very entangled in material life. And Narada thought, you know, they have such good qualities, they're gentle, they're well behaved, they're learned. Their culture, that should be used not to procreate, which is going on in any case, in every species of life, but that should be used to the service of the Lord. And it was not an offense for them to disobey their father, because you could say he wasn't acting as a real father, because he wasn't guiding them how to be liberated from the cycle of birth and death, but rather to become more entangled. But Daksha was unhappy, as we've been discussing. Parents are often unhappy when their children become devotees. We have many young men here. I don't want to embarrass anyone, but just to get a sense of whether it's still like that. You can just quickly raise your hands and bring them down so no one has time to like see who's because we don't want to like but just to give a sense how I'll ask two questions. The first is, how many parents supported your joining Krishna consciousness, and how many discouraged it? So just very quickly, how many supported? Okay. And how many discouraged it? Okay. Been going on since time immemorial. Your parents are in good company with Daksha. But now I come to a very important point, which Srila Prabhupada added to what he told Mahamsa me. And that is that by your becoming devotees, your whole family will benefit. If you become pure devotees, your parents for seven generations will be liberated. And then he said, so by serving in the Krishna consciousness movement, you're actually doing the best service to your parents. And I saw that in the case of my parents. They never became devotees. They did service. They were never really favorable. But at the end, I would say they both had very auspicious departures. Very auspicious. And afterwards, one devotee wrote me a quote from Srila Prabhupada that was so appropriate. I mean, it made such an impression on me. It was so true. And it made such an impression on me that I, on the spot, I memorized it. Srila Prabhupada said that the parents of my disciples will realize their good fortune at the time of their passing away. Yeah. I won't go into too many details, but my father, it was auspicious, like, anyway, but at the very end, his eyes opened, and a smile appeared on his face, and he left with a smile on his face. And even, and the whole room was sort of surcharged with a sort of blissful atmosphere. It was very unexpected. No one expected it. And you know, I was there, my sister was there, my cousins, two cousins were there, their wives were there. And like no one moved. It was like a very stunning experience with that blissful atmosphere. And my sister like she said, what do you think he saw? Like his, because everyone could see his eyes open and a smile came. What? And she's not a person who even really has a clear idea of the soul or the differences between the body and the soul. So it was very striking. It's very striking. And then, I guess, 2 days later, there was like the funeral. The way they do it is there's like a memorial service in the Jewish temple in my father's case, and then after that they take the body to the cemetery and bury it. So my father was a judge, quite a prominent person, and so, you know, many people came in, there are hundreds of people, and you know, the rabbi gave a talk, eulogy, and I had written a letter to my father after he left, so the rabbi read that. And after that ceremony, no one got up from their seats, no one left. And that evening back at my father's house, you know, different, you know, friends and relatives were coming. And there was one couple, they were lawyers from the same class as my father. And they said they'd never experienced a memorial program like that, where at the end no one got up, like no one wanted to leave, they just remained in their seats. And there was a very special atmosphere, and I can only attribute it to the spiritual position that my father attained, really by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. He did service, sort of, not really for Krishna, but for me. But he, you know, he did service. But I think mainly it was like what Prabhupada said, that if a member of the family becomes a devotee, the whole family benefits. So devotees, many devotees are like description of the Haryashvas. They're gentle, they're well behaved, they're cultured. I see it even when parents of devotees become sick. It often ends up that it's the devotee that takes care of the sick, aged parents, even though they have other brothers and sisters, but they're like too selfish. So devotees, you know, and it increases. I mean, I definitely became much better behaved after I met Srila Prabhupada. So the parents benefit a lot. So, and then Prabhupada concluded this little talk to me in Mahamsa by saying that, so you're doing the best thing for your parents and family members, so don't leave. And it's true. It's really true. So I congratulate all of you for coming forward and heeding the call of Narada Muni, coming through Parampara, through Srila Prabhupada, through Srila Prabhupada and Narada Muni servants, and helping this Krishna consciousness movement. And continuing the the effort. You know, I was thinking of the Hariashvas, you know, Prajapati Mahariashvas, that, you know, he had so many sons. But what did he want from the sons? Just to create more sons. Because, you know, he already had so many sons. What does he want them to do? Create more sons. Well, that's sort of natural in the material realm. And the same principle operates on the spiritual, in the spiritual realm. That, okay, we have so many devotees. So what do we want the devotees to do? Make more devotees. It's the same principle. Except that type of procreation leads to material entanglement and bondage and suffering. Whereas the increase of the spiritual family means more souls are being liberated from the material bondage and returning to our original home with our original family in Goloka Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Questions or comments?
Hare Krishna, I want to thank you. That was very, very inspiring. Very wonderful. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I had a similar experience. My mother wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, because as you mentioned, in those days the parents were very concerned that their vegetarian sons and daughters were going to starve to death or develop severe malnutrition. It was definitely a concern in that generation. So my mother also wrote to Srila Prabhupada about it. What about my sons? Because, as you know, my brother also is a devotee, Narayan Das. And what about my son's health? I don't think they can become healthy. I don't think they'll be properly healthy in nutrition in this vegetarian diet. Prabhupada wrote back a very wonderful letter to my mother. He said, you take care of their bodies, and I'll take care of their souls.
What should be the attitude and activities towards parents for a devotee who wants to serve lifetime? I think the best advice is to be nice to them. It's very hard for most parents to accept instruction from their children, because they think their children are their children. They should be listening to the parents, not that the parents should be listening to the children. So it may not be very congenial to preach to them. But by showing them that you're happy, that you're gentle, you're well-behaved, you're respectful, you're cultured, they'll see, my son has improved by this association, by this philosophy, by this practice. And so they will respect it more. And if you can engage them, taking prasad, visiting the temple, visiting holy places, Vrindavan, and maybe meeting other devotees, they can become more favorable. And just by appreciating, they make advancements. It's in the Bhagavad. So if they just appreciate you and how you've improved, they will make advancement. It was very interesting. After serving in India for 3 years, I actually became quite sick with jaundice. Well, I recovered from the jaundice, but then I had a relapse, and then it was harder to recover from the relapse than the original case. So I, in the end, Prabhupada said, unless, that as long as Giriraj stays in Bombay, he won't be able to recover. So I went to Los Angeles. It was very interesting. I didn't make the connection before, but Tamal Krishna Goswami was the GBC in India then, and a devotee named Karandar, he was in charge of Los Angeles. And so I guess Prabhupada knew that Tamal Krishna Goswami would be happy that I was going. And Prabhupada said to him, in Los Angeles, Karandar will supply him Sandesh and Rasgula, which you could not do. So anyway, in Los Angeles, I recovered, and then I went back to Bombay. But while I was there, Sri Dayananda Maharaj's mother came to meet Srila Prabhupada. And it was very interesting how Srila Prabhupada spoke to her. First he said, your son is very intelligent. And she said, yes, Howard always was a good student. But then he told the story of Kapila Dev and Devahuti. How Devahuti had a son who was a great sage, and her son instructed her in spiritual knowledge. And because of the good instructions that she received from her son, she became liberated. So he said, your son, that's all right. But if he has knowledge that can be helpful to you, you should be prepared to take it, just like Devahuti took instruction from her son. So we can try, but it's not guaranteed that the parents will listen. I would say the main thing is just be nice to them, gentle, well behaved, respectful, and engage them, and you speak to them to whatever extent they're willing to hear, but don't force too much. It's an offense to preach to the faithless, to be very careful about that. What is the duty of Grihastha devotees? Well, in one sense, the duty of every devotee is the same. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyas, which is to serve Krishna. So, as I mentioned last night, Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami, Nam Ruchi, which is have taste for the holy name, Jivadaya, one should show mercy to the fallen souls, and Vaishnava Sevana, one should serve the devotees. So that's for everyone, and Grihasthas in particular, you should, husband should deliver his wife and children. Wife should serve her husband and deliver her their children. Given charity. Grihasthas, part of Grihastha Dharma, given charity in a Krishna conscious way. There is so much in the scriptures. So, I received a gentle reminder that it is 9:44, now it's 9:46, and I have to catch a flight. I came here for many reasons, but one reason was to serve His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, who really has done wonders in Delhi and other places, all over. But I'm seeing in particular in Delhi, he's done wonders. I did visit Punjabi Bagh many years ago when it was just a construction office. Saurabh was in charge. It was just a construction office. And they had a small temple, basically for the devotees and the construction team. And then, you know, they began by having a little Sunday program, and now it's developed to this beautiful temple. And of course, what to speak of Sri Sri Radhakrishnasarati Mandir, and I hear there are many temples coming up all over Delhi, and so many young men joining, congregation expanding, books being distributed in huge numbers. It's really amazing and inspiring. So I wanted to serve him. But he's also calling me to Bombay because today is Rath Yatra. So I have to serve him there as well. And my flight is, as it is, I won't be there for the beginning, but I want to be there for some of it. So I think we have 10-12 minutes. So I'll stay on if anyone, well, as promised, I guess I have to sign books if anyone takes books. And if there are any little exchanges, we can do that in the next few minutes. Thank you all very much.